If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. It is the biggest week in pro wrestling in 2019, and here today and on Saturday with Sondra, we are going to cover it here at Inside the Ropes. But I'm here with the king of the Power Slam, Finn Martin. Finn, you're fresh off a night of there being two simultaneous shows on major networks in the US. Is this like 20-year-old deja vu for you?
It really is huge. I mean, generally when it's pro wrestling, it's hyperbole, it's deliberate exaggeration for effect. But I think it's absolutely accurate to say that this has been the biggest week, not only of 2019, but of, I don't know, maybe since 2001. I think so, in US wrestling. I don't think that's an exaggeration to say.
It's definitely the biggest week of the decade. You know, and we're 9 years into the decade. I don't know if there's a bigger week. I think there's been bigger incidents, maybe.
Yes.
But like in terms of, I mean, Raw on Monday, the Wars last night, SmackDown on Friday, the pay per view on Sunday, all this stuff going on. And you know, there's a lot of stuff as we talk about AEW, because we're recording this on Thursday. It's 3:05 PM in the UK as we record this on Thursday, the 3rd of October. But we're actually not recording the overrun until Saturday because the ratings aren't out yet for AEW and NXT. And really, that's one of the big things that we like to delve into when we talk about wrestling. So, you know, we need to wait for that. And I think a lot of people are maybe going to be shocked at the results of those ratings. But there's so much going on. So I'm glad that we're here to cover it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait and see on the ratings. Obviously, they will be out later today. We'll have time to digest them, and then we will offer our analysis on Saturday, as you say, Kenny, in the overrun. We will see who goes over and who goes under. We will see.
And by that point, you know, I've not had a chance to watch NXT yet. I don't know if you have. I've not.
No.
But you know, we'll probably both have watched that by the time we record on Saturday, so we can, you know, when we're talking about the ratings, we'll have seen both shows. So you know, we'll be able to kind of analyze certain, you know, if there is a point where it appears that people were watching one and then changed to the other, we don't really know. So we're gonna be able to talk about that more on Saturday.
Yes.
Before we do though, let's delve into Raw. It was the go-home show for Hell in a Cell. It was also the season premiere. There's a new set. There's new announcers. There's a new theme tune. Overall,
There's Pyro!
Overall, before we get into the details of the show, what did you think of the season premiere in terms of trying to look different, feel different, and re-energize the program a little bit?
It was definitely different. You could see a conscious effort had been made to present something that would be memorable and that would be seen as the start of something new. That's my take on it. That's my take on it in terms of a summary. Without, obviously, we're going to go into more detail about what happened on the show. But I think it was, definitely lots of thought had gone into this to distinguish this episode of Raw from previous week's episodes. What do you think, Kenny?
I think that was definitely the case. And I think that this was kind of, you know, Paul Heyman took over in July. And I would say that we saw glimpses of his booking throughout August. But now I feel like this was really, I mean, this was a Paul Heyman show. In a lot of ways, a lot of stuff that happened on it. So I feel like this was kind of like almost his big coming out party in some ways, because even having like Vic Joseph and Dio Madden is on the commentary team, they're clearly Heyman moves. The angle at the end is clearly a Heyman move. So there was a lot of him across this, which was interesting. So the so we open with a new intro theme, a new set that's kind of very impressive. What did you make of the new set? I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it as well. You know, as you say, it was a new opening video, new entrance music, a slightly different logo. You know, the pyro was, I mean, I think it was something that people did miss. And I think when the pyro went off, people were like, yes, it's back. So I think there was, you know, cheers and, you know, fist pumping around the globe at that. So because it just felt like, yeah, why can't we have this? This company can afford it. You know, it's not Impact Wrestling. You know, they've got a few quid in the kitty. They can afford pyro. So let's have it. And then we had the new announce team, Vic Joseph, Dio Madden, Jerry Lawler. The announcing was the low point of the night to me. I thought it was a mess. Too much Jerry Lawler. I would say just get rid of him now. I thought he ruined the show in terms of the commentary. I mean, I enjoyed the show overall in the ring, but his commentary was just at times I was just yelling, shut up, Lawler, let someone else speak. I just thought he took over. I mean, I know it's a new team, so, I mean, they could improve. But Lawler, to me, just felt so out of date and behind the times. I just thought he was getting in the way of Vic Joseph and Dio Madden. What do you think to the commentary, Kenny?
There was parts of it I liked. I liked Vic Joseph leading the way. I thought he was a kind of fresh person on the job.
Yeah.
I think the Jerry Lawler thing is interesting because I don't think he was completely useless on the show. And there was points where I actually liked his experience and him kind of selling certain elements. I think the problem was that, kind of to your point, Jerry Lawler is so kind of sure of himself that he just kind of took over on the show. And I think that and I'm hoping that Joseph and Madden are going to find a way, because this is the first episode and this is the kind of, you know, oh, we're with Jerry Lawler. We watched him growing up. Next week, they need to step up more. They need to take some of the time back, because I think if Lawler had been on the mic maybe half the time that he was, I think a lot more of what he said would have landed better. But I think because he was so all over it that it kind of detracted from what Joseph and Madden were trying to do. And, you know, Madden's been someone who he did a month in 205 Live. He's not really done any more than that. He's very new. And then Vic Joseph is someone who, you know, is this going to be a big gig for him? So I'm willing to kind of give them more of a benefit of the doubt. I thought that they were an improvement on Corey, Michael, Cole and Renee, to be honest. I thought they were a better three-way team. But I just think that I going forward, I'd like to see the quantity of how much Lawler speaks go down and see them go up, which I then think will complement Lawler as a kind of sidekick character. That's how I feel about it.
That's what he needs to be. I mean, it was full on Lawler here. I mean, as you said, Dio Madden hasn't been doing this for very long. He's new to this. He doesn't want to tread on anyone's toes. He's just not familiar yet with, you know, obviously, you know, working with these two guys. And perhaps Joseph and Madden are sort of in awe of Lawler to some extent. And that becomes another thing where you don't want to overstep the mark, because Lawler's been doing this a lot longer than them. But you're right, these two need to step up. They need to go into Raw in future, you know, feeling confident about themselves and being, you know, ready, willing and able to contribute their opinions and, you know, pushing Lawler out if necessary in time. Once they, I guess, they get that to that comfort level where they know that this team is in for the long haul, or at least for a while. I think Lawler will be replaced by somebody else, and I hope he is very soon. But until that happens, you know, Vic and Dio, they've got to flex their commentator muscles and seize ownership of more of the airtime, because Lawler just, I mean, I just thought this was, I thought this at times really was struggling. I was almost pressing the mute button because I thought Lawler was unbearable. You know, he's just using, you know, he's coming out with his old jokes, like you couldn't find Heavy Machinery's IQ with a flashlight. You know, Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks, they're just about to go at it. And Lawler's saying the claws have come out. That kind of reminds me of Joey Styles in the mid-90s when he yelled catfight. I mean, that's not appropriate language in 2019. But, you know, Lawler's a guy who's behind the times. He's somebody that needs to be replaced. They need a guy in his late 20s, 30s, or maybe even 40s, but someone younger than Lawler who's aware of what's going on now, who can bring something new and fresh to the commentary table. Yeah, I just want to see the back of Lawler, Kenny. I think I've made that point clear.
I think you have. I thought that he did add something at points, but I thought at other points he detracted. So for me, it was more of a mixed bag. But for Joseph and Madden, they've got to step up. I think Heyman is going to be in their ear to do so. I think Heyman is definitely going to be telling them, you know, because I don't think Heyman, I'm sure this is not said, but I don't think Heyman wants Lawler there either.
Absolutely no way does Heyman want Lawler there.
But he's playing the game.
We know that those two, for real, do not like each other. And Heyman is keenly aware of everything that I've just said about Jerry Lawler.
Oh, 100%. I will not say what it is, because I would never break that. But I asked Paul Heyman if him and Jerry Lawler got on. And I asked him this kind of, you know, away from when he was over on the tour. And we were sitting having dinner, and I said, you know, do you and Jerry get on? And I won't repeat what he said, but he said something that was like, no insult to Jerry Lawler of any kind, but what he said, he made sure to not say what he didn't say to make a point. And I got what he was saying, which was, you know, he's there, I'm here, that's fine. And yeah. And I think he'll play the game, but by all accounts, Jerry Lawler is short term. I wouldn't mind seeing Lawler with Joseph and Madden for a couple of months, and then sort of towards the end of the year, maybe when you come back from the Christmas holidays, then you get your new team to get you into WrestleMania season. Give Joseph and Madden a bit of time to get acquainted with it, but they need to step up. They need to step up so that Lawler isn't as all over the show as he was.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. They need to absolutely seize control of some. There needs to be a hostile takeover by Vic and Dio. Take some of that airtime back.
So we opened the show with Rey Mysterio coming out. He's coming out and he's talking about the match he's got later on with Seth Rollins on the show for the Universal Championship. He's going to dedicate the match to his son Dominic, who's in the front row. And before he can go any further, the music of Brock Lesnar hits. We get him and Paul Heyman with Pyro Finn. Brock Lesnar with Pyro.
Oh, yes!
And Lesnar comes out. He rips the microphone at Mysterio's hand, gives it to Heyman. Heyman is about to talk when Mysterio rips the mic out of Heyman's hand. He's about to speak when Lesnar grabs him. F5, second F5. Then he goes up to Dominic Mysterio, who sits down. Then he grabs Dominic and flings him over the barricade. He ramrods him around the ring. F5s and German suplexes to Dominic. He's beating up Ray. Teases leaving a few times, comes back, suplexes both of them. Heyman's calling for Lesnar to stop. He's putting the boots to him. He puts the boots to Finlay at Lesnar. He puts the boots to Pat Buck, another producer. Ragdoll and Dominic all over the shop. Fans are chanting asshole. Lesnar's ripping off his t-shirt and smiling. What an angle to kick off the show. I've always said that if you're not going to deliver something, which was the Seth and Ray match, that you have to, in not delivering it, you have to deliver something of equal substance. And I think they did that with this angle. What did you make of the opening angle to Raw?
Yeah, really good. I should just mention as well that when Lesnar ripped his t-shirt off, he sort of rolled it up and held it above his head as if it were a title belt.
He's coming for that belt tomorrow night.
Yeah, so I thought that was a nice touch. Can't remember who it was that pointed this out on Facebook. I think it was a member of the Inside the Ropes community. He noted that Kofi Kingston is so ineffectual as a champion that no one was chanting for Kofi Kingston to come out and make the save. Kofi Kingston didn't really cross my mind until Lesnar took his t-shirt off and held it up above his head. I'm like, oh yeah, he's got a match on Friday against Kofi Kingston. This was all about Lesnar. This was all about Lesnar and Mysterio, and Lesnar and Dominic. Dominic, what a sell job by that guy. I mean, it was so believable. I mean, this was the most believable thing on WWE TV in, I couldn't even tell you the last time anyone sold with that level of conviction. it was like you're watching it thinking, because at one point Lesnar tried to pick Dominic up and it was as if Dominic didn't know which way to go. And then I think he rammed him into the post at that point. I thought at first that maybe Lesnar was going to do an F5, but instead he rammed him into the post. And it sort of looked like one of those moments where they weren't working, like Lesnar had genuinely gone into business for himself. And that added to the realism of this angle. And then he kept going back and beating down Ray, beating down Dominic. And then as Dominic was being stretchered off, Ray's apologising to him. There was no laughing or joking from Lesnar. This was a proper heel heat-seeking assault. This was like old-school wrestling. This was something that Heyman was probably thinking, I can't wait to do something like this, because this is going to get people talking, because it looks realistic. And so seldom does pro wrestling look realistic these days. And a huge part of that is that no one sells with any conviction. And here we were, Dominic Mysterio. You know, he was basically restoring the honor of the cell. You know, bringing back the big cell, Kenny. You know what I mean? Without the cell, what is pro wrestling? You know, it's a bunch of people, you know, pretending to fight. When you've got the cell, you know, that's what injects the emotion to it. That's what makes it real. That enables us to suspend our disbelief. So, yeah, I thought this angle was tremendous. One of the best angles I've seen in WWE. I don't know when was the last time we saw something better than this.
Yeah, it was great. Any doubts that I had about Dominic Mysterio maybe getting into the wrestling business after this, I'm like, get this guy in. Like, he in doing this, if this is how good he is at selling, like, he got what he was supposed to do. He got who he was supposed to be. He didn't try and act the tough guy. And he nailed it. He absolutely nailed it.
I mean, I think part of the reason Kenny was so effective was he's not really... I mean, we know he's in WWE. We know he's going to be wrestling for WWE. But he hasn't got that WWE polish, you know, where people do things that don't really seem realistic, because that's the WWE way of doing things. Kind of goes through the WWE filter. Which, you know, eliminates the realism from it. So it was because I think he was inexperienced. That's what made it work so well. If, you know, 5 years from now, he probably would struggle to do something as effective as this. So, it was a tremendous start. I mean, just set the tone for the show. And fans were like, was that supposed to happen? Suspension of disbelief. I mean, we just need so much more of it in pro wrestling. That's, to me, what has been missing for so long.
So we won't obviously go through everything that happens on Raw, but we'll go through most of the big stuff. We got a match with Sasha Banks and Alexa Bliss. We should mention, obviously, that Rey Mysterio is obviously not going to be in the match with Seth Rollins, so he ends up helping Dominic, who's been stretchered out, and they're away at the hospital. So we've got Sasha versus Alexa Bliss. Bayley and Nikki Cross were banned from ringside. Sasha would end up getting the win after feigning a leg injury. And then kicked Alexa Bliss's leg and pinned her. Becky Lynch comes out after it. They kind of face off. Lynch has got the mic. You know, she can't wait for Hell in a Cell. Retribution's coming Sasha's way. So I thought they did a pretty decent job of building the Sasha Becky thing. I'm looking forward to seeing them in the cell. The match was a little bit underwhelming, though, just because it didn't really seem to get going.
Yeah, it definitely feels like Alexa Bliss is been toned right down now, which in a sense is a shame, because Alexa is someone to me who can be a star, mostly because of her personality and the way she looks. But the priority here was Sasha versus Becky Lynch, so they actually did the right thing in taking Alexa Bliss down and making her seem less important, because this was all about Sasha versus Becky Lynch. Should mention that Becky Lynch was on commentary during this match, so we had four people on commentary, which meant that they were tripping over each other quite a bit at the announce desk. It wasn't really much of a match, but this was all about Sasha versus Becky, and it achieved that objective.
So, I'm excited to see Becky and Sasha in the cell on Sunday. So we'll see what they can do with it. So then we had Ziggler and Roode against Heavy Machinery for the Raw Tag Team titles. They went about 12 minutes. I was pretty underwhelmed by the match, though. I feel like Heavy Machinery are pretty good act, but I think Roode and Ziggler I was kind of hoping them being together, they would develop a groove, but I don't feel like they have. No. So I just, even though they retained, I just kind of thought, I was expecting a little bit more from this match.
Yeah, I mean, Roode and Ziggler still feel like two singles wrestlers who've been thrown together. They don't feel like a team. They don't really do anything together. They've still got like different music, and it just sort of feels like a stopgap to give them something to do. Should mention that Roode pinned Tucker with the Glorious DDT, which is the most devastating move in WWE right now.
It's the one that's getting over. It's the one that's beating people. So I mean, it's behind the F5.
But you're right. Yeah, it wasn't really much of a match. Just, you know, I think it was something really just. It was just to give these guys some TV time. Didn't really do much for either squad, as far as I could work out.
Well, what was quite surprising to me was that fans in their hundreds of thousands tuned in for Hogan and Flair on this show. There was a drop off of a couple of hundred thousand after their segment on the show. I know you'd posted on your Facebook page some of the ratings of the show. By hour three, it was, you know, down to, I think it was 2,400,000. But at the beginning of the show, it was like 2,750,000. So people were curious to see what Hogan and Flair were going to do on the show. They do the Miz TV segment where Miz brings them out. Hogan basically puts over Flair, and then Flair just picks a fight with Hogan for no reason. He starts saying, you know, you might be the biggest draw in the company along with Austin and Taker, but I'm the best in the ring of all time. And Hogan's saying, I think you just want one more shot of the 24-inch pythons. Flair removes his jacket, Hogan's flexing, Flair's bouncing off the ropes. And then they just kind of make it like, oh, we're just kidding. Hogan said, we're not spring chickens anymore. Fans surprisingly chant one more match, Finn. Fans are chanting for one more match.
No more matches.
Maybe not. What was that really weird match they had in WCW? The Yappapai strap or something like that. It's like a really weird name for a strap match that they had.
Was that the one in early 2000? It could have been at Super Brawl Uncensored.
Yes, that's the one.
But they had a lot of matches in TNA a decade on from that.
They had a tour in Australia in 2009. They had that as well.
Anyone who thinks it's a good idea should be made to watch their matches from TNA.
The Yappapai Indian strap match that they had, where they headlined Uncensored 2000.
Uncensored 2000, just before the dream team of Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff took over.
No wonder they went to that well. I probably would have went there at that point. Anyway, so Miz reveals the news that had been apparently agreed earlier on that day. The Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia, there will be Team Hogan versus Team Flair. Hogan will captain one team of five, Flair will captain the other. Seth Rollins comes out as Hogan's captain. Orton comes out as Flair's captain. There's a great line where Orton says, you know, are you able to get your head out of Hogan's ass? just great. Dickhead Randy Orton is the best. So Orton then challenges Rollins to a match, but then we end up getting Corbin coming out as part of Team Flair, Rusev coming out as part of Team Hogan. We've got Hogan flexing on the top of the stage with Rollins and Rusev. There's a lot going on here, Finn, and I think that this is one of those ones where critically it was a bit of a clusterfuck, but the fans did seem to enjoy it. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, I was bracing myself for Hogan being booed, and he really wasn't. In fact, the only person who was booed was Flair when he said that he didn't have an equal in the ring. So, I mean, Hogan was there putting Flair over, and then Flair's like, well, you know, you might have sold all the tickets and the pay-per-views and might have made all this money, but I had no equal in the ring. And he was booed for it. And then I really enjoyed the little sort of ruse that they were going to have a match. And I thought they set that up beautifully. And then they let us all in on the secret that they were just kidding and they shook hands. And I thought this segment was beautifully done. I thought, I mean, Flair and Hogan, they've had a rough time on TV. They haven't really looked good on TV for a long time, either due to the scenarios or segments in which they've been booked or the reactions from the audience. And I thought this was a real, you know, uplifting slice of nostalgia until they announced the next Saudi Arabia show. And that was, talk about a mood killer. So there's another Crown Jewel show, October 31st. As you said, it's going to be two teams of five. Team Hogan versus Team Flair. And then, you know, Seth Rollins, Randy Orton came out. Rollins captain Team Hogan, Orton captain of Team Flair. And then we had, and I believe Orton and Rollins are going to pick their own teammates. I think that was the message. I think that was what they said.
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
King Corbin out, so then Rusev out. So I think it was supposed to be a Rollins versus Orton match, but that was interrupted by Corbin and Rusev. And it looked to me like Rollins in the end, Rollins and Rusev were having the time of their life, posing on the stage with the Hulkster.
They were. I have a question for you. What are you looking forward to the most on October 31st? Crown Jewel, Halloween, or Brexit? They say it comes in threes, Ben. You can't make it up. So Halloween, Crown Jewel.
I've had to stop watching the news. It was making me, it was having a detrimental effect on my mental health. You know, the whole what's going on with Brexit. I know we're not allowed to talk about this podcast, and I'm not going to. This is supposed to be a Brexit-free zone. So I'm not really looking forward to that. I'm not really looking forward to Crown Jewel. Maybe I'll just go on holiday or something. Maybe I'll just leave the country, you know, on October 29th and come back on November 1st. That's if they'll let me back in.
I was going to say, I don't know if that's a good idea, Finn. I'd maybe hedge your bets on a holiday for now.
Yeah.
maybe go somewhere in America. I wouldn't do a Europe holiday at this point. Yeah.
Sage advice, young man.
Do you know what is funny? I thought the Hogan Flair stuff was just a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Like, and it shouldn't be, and it's like, but it shows you, I think there is actually mileage in having these guys around once in a while if you use them in the right way. And they very rarely are used in the right way. But yeah, you know, like for Hogan, like when they had that birthday bash for him and Lesnar came out and said, the party's over, Grandpa. Or when Flair was kind of used with Charlotte in the past. Like there's ways to use them. And I think that what this segment showed us is that Flair and Hogan still have value in WWE if they're used the right way. And this is one of the rare instances where they were. And if they're not going to be in the ring wrestling in Saudi Arabia and they're just going to be in the corner, then that's a pretty good use of them. And I've got to say, I thought Hogan, I know I'm biased, looked great here. He just, yeah, he seemed to be, he kind of felt like Hulk Hogan again, which he doesn't feel like a lot. So the segment really worked for me. And, it, you know, I'm not going to have the Crown Jewel discussion again. We all feel the same way about it. But I thought the segment was a ton of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, WWE has said for well over a decade, probably decades, plural, that it's all about putting smiles on people's faces. Now, when you're bringing out veterans, retired veterans like Flair and Hogan and whomever else, that's what they should do. It should be uplifting in some way. That's what they should do. And they did that here. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it as well.
So we had a couple other things in the show that aren't really that noteworthy. The Viking Raiders got a win over the OC and Ricochet got a win over Cesaro. But the next thing in the show that's pretty memorable is the Firefly Funhouse, which aired and Ramblin' Rabbit was scared to death. And Bray Wyatt comes in, he's like, you know, why? And he then ends up tossing Ramblin' Rabbit aside as if Ramblin' Rabbit has met his end. He then said that he's worried about what the Fiend's going to do to Seth Rollins on Sunday, but he told them it's okay to be scared because, you know, he's scared too because there's nothing like Hell in a Cell. He's explaining to the pig what it's like. He says, you know, imagine a world without chocolate, only worse. and he talks about, you know, he's got an idea, he's going to find him and tell him to be nice to Rollins. And then he gets serious and then he like waves byzies. I mean, this character is just worth its weight in gold.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so sinister, isn't it? I mean, and when you look at the audience is just mesmerized. They're hanging on his every word. And there's something different. Every time one of these segments is broadcast, we get something new and different. And, I mean, we had Ramblin' Rabbit, as you say. Ramblin' Rabbit apparently passed away. And then Bray just chucks him aside. you know, like an apple core. You know, I'd say like a, you know, an empty water bottle, but there's no single-use plastic inside the ropes. You can be sure of that. So, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, it was a really good segment of game because you never really know what he's going to say. And this has been going on now since, was it May, the Firefly Funhouse segment started? I think it was May, wasn't it? You did look it up. I think it was last week. And you would think by now there would be some repetition, and there really isn't any. I mean, he's managing to come up with something original every week. And you know, I know some people were saying, well, you know, Hell in a Cell's this weekend and WWE did so little to promote it. Well, I sort of disagree with that. I think they've done a really good job promoting the big matches, the top matches. And this Wyatt versus Seth Rollins match, the way they promoted it, is unlike any promotion I've ever seen for any other match, partly because Bray Wyatt the Fiend is a true original. We've never seen a character like this before. So, yeah, really good segment again. And you know what, Kenny, if Wyatt or the Fiend does win the title on Sunday, as I believe he will, what will he do in the Firefly Funhouse as champion? I mean, that there is going to create so many more options for him as a character, as a champion, isn't it?
It is, and you know, I've never really understood the idea of, first of all, to your point, you know, Hell in a Cell has been built on three matches, and the three matches that they are building have been built pretty well. Becky and Sasha, Seth and The Fiend, and then the tag match with Rowan and Harper against Roman and Bryan. So I would much rather see a pay-per-view that's been built really well with three big matches and then see what else is on it rather than like eight matches that I don't care about.
Yeah.
But whereas with The Fiend, I've never really understood, you know, when Brock Lesnar was champion, it was like people didn't like that he was a part-time champion. I don't care if you're a part-time champion if you being the champion is entertaining, because we've seen it done with Brock both ways. We've seen it done when it was pretty good. We've seen it done when it was pretty bad. So I don't really want to see The Fiend every single week. I want to see him sometimes, but sometimes I just want to see a Firefly Funhouse. And that's it. I don't want them to have it where this character, where they feel like they have to have The Fiend in the arena on TV every week. I think that having him every couple of weeks and having him be a little bit more sporadic adds to the character. So I feel like even with him being champion could make it much more interesting. And hey, sometimes you build to having your champion appear and have title matches. That used to be what people liked. And I think there's a market to do that again, especially with him.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you go back to, you know, the squash match era of the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, the WWF champion almost never wrestled on TV. I mean, we'd wrestle on Saturday night's main event, but not on the regular TV show. Because, you know, if you wanted to see the champ, he was on pay-per-view or Saturday night's main event, or you had to pay a ticket to see him at the house shows. And that kind of made him more special, that he wasn't on TV every week wrestling, or on TV wrestling ever, really. But yeah, with Bray, yeah, to me, it preserves the magic of the character. And, you know, this character is so special that they absolutely need to safeguard it. And as champion, there's so much mileage. There's so many different directions they can go with this. And I'm really excited to see where they do go with Bray if, as I suspect, he becomes champion on Sunday.
We shall see. We also got a match on Raw with AJ Styles and Cedric Alexander for the US title. Pretty good match. They ended up seeing AJ get the win in just over 9 minutes. What did you make of AJ getting another win over Cedric?
Yeah, at least it was competitive. It didn't feel like Cedric was squashed. As he was at the last pay-per-view and on the Raw the next night. So this was, you know, felt like Cedric was rehabilitated here a little bit. I mean, the finish to me, the outcome to me was never in any doubt, but at least it was competitive. And I think Cedric did get something out of it. I think he was rebuilt or reheated slightly, you know, from the sort of destruction that they inflicted upon him a few weeks ago. So, yeah, I enjoyed the match. Yeah, definitely enjoyed the match. What did you think, Kenny?
I thought it was a fun match. You know, I've said before, I don't really think Cedric is the guy, but, you know, I think he's definitely a good mid-card guy to have around, so it works. I'm curious to see who AJ is going to feud with next. Maybe Braun Strowman or something, or, I mean, the brand split is really going to dictate where things go. We also got the feud that never ends with Natalya and Lacey Evans continuing. when Lacey beat her in a match and then afterwards left her lame with a women's right. But I
quite enjoyed this match. It seems to me that, you know, Natalya and Lacey Evans, I mean, I always say with a wrestler, you should only do the things that you can do well, you know. And I feel like Lacey Evans has trimmed down her repertoire now, and he's only doing things that she can do well. And I thought this match was pretty good. I think their matches have been.
She's getting better. I mean, she should never do a sharpshooter again. But apart from that,
no, definitely not. I mean, the timing of Natalya's discus clothesline was just about perfect. I think Evans won with the, I think it was a rolling reverse cradle, and then punched Natalya afterwards. So perhaps this has drawn a line under the Natalya versus Lacey feud. I think from the commentary, I got the impression that this is it now, and that they'll both be moving on. But yeah, I mean, Lacey to me is, we'll see where she is in 6 months. But if she continues to improve, maybe there's a road back to her for another run at the title, but not until next year at the earliest.
We had Heyman doing a pretty stellar interview backstage where, you know, the real blame lies with Vince McMahon for booking Lesnar for the season premiere when you knew he'd be in fight mode because he's facing Kofi. And I thought Heyman did a really good job here of sort of blaming everybody else for what Lesnar did to Mysterio.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought a lot of the stuff backstage felt spontaneous as well. Almost reminded me of WWE or Raw from 20 years ago, where we got like Sasha Banks turning up and we got these quick fire promos, all sorts of things happening where it didn't feel, you know, overly structured, where it just felt spontaneous and raw, which was the whole idea of Raw in the first place, that it was just supposed to be this show where, you know, on which anything could happen. And that was definitely the mood I think they were trying to get across. And I think they did succeed as well with that. Just want to mention also that there was a segment with John Cena mentioning that he's going to match donations up to $1 million for a charity called Fit Ops, which is helping veterans. So good on Cena for that. You know, good on. Yeah. Want to absolutely give John Cena huge credit for that.
We got an interview with Maria Kanellis. She was asked about Rusev. She said Rusev's not the father of her child. He has enough going on with Lana. Because earlier in the show, they'd interviewed Rusev. He challenged Rollins for the main event, and he was asked about Lana, and he didn't want to talk about his personal life. So we were led to wonder what's going on there. A limo pulls up backstage. We're wondering who's in it. Very, very Attitude Era. And then the main event is Seth Rollins versus Rusev for the Universal title. We've got Orton and Corbin watching on the stage, and they're playing up, commentary are playing up the issues with Rusev and Lana potentially. And as the match is kind of going on, Rusev caught Rollins with a super kick, and Bobby Lashley's theme plays, and he comes out onto the stage, and then motions for someone to come out, and it's Lana, and then Lashley and Lana proceed to make out in front of Rusev. And as this is going on, the lights then change, the Fiend appears, he puts the mandible claw on Rollins, he's grunting and laughing, and the show goes off the air. A very chaotic end to the show. What did you think of the chaos?
Again, Kenny, very Attitude Era-esque, don't Indeed. You think? With all these different things going on to hold our attention. So, I mean, if we're a bit bored of Rollins and Rusev, well, there's all these other things going on that and what could be more interesting, or this could happen, or that could happen, or will these people win it, or won't they? And yeah, Lashley returns, and then Lana came out, and she got into character there. I mean, I know you're not a big fan of Lana, Kenny, but I mean, give her credit there for that performance.
She did well. The key thing is going to be how they follow up. It's like the Maria thing. I'm biting, and I'm biting. I just need a good follow up. You know,
yeah.
That's all I want.
I mean, remember when Lana and Dolph Ziggler, remember that? Was that a couple of years ago now? I mean, that
2016,
was...
2016, yeah.
Yeah, that was... I don't know whether... I think it's excruciating is too strong a word, but it was something that I'm sure both would like to eliminate from their CVs, from their resumes. So, I mean, yeah, as you say, where's this going? Well, obviously, it's going to lead to a Lashley versus Rusev feud. I mean, earlier in the program, Charlie Caruso had spoken to Rusev about Lana, what's going on? He didn't want to talk about it. You know, this is a different Rusev character. There's no humor at all there with him. So that was a big part of Rusev's appeal to the audience, was that he's got such a huge sense of humor, as we know from Total Divas and from his Twitter feed and everything. So this is a very different character now. You know, we'll see how this gets over. You know, maybe people are going to start clamoring for the old Rusev again, but we know it's going to be Rusev versus Lashley, with Lana in the middle, probably burying Rusev. Obviously, Randy Orton and King Corbin were there watching. And then, as you said, The Fiend came out at the end, attacked Seth Rollins again. I mean, Rollins didn't really offer any resistance. I mean, the message is definitely, how can Seth Rollins possibly defeat The Fiend in Hell in a Cell on Sunday? Even though he'd said the previous week, I will survive and I will prevail, it's definitely feeling like the odds are stacked against him at Hell in a Cell. So lots going on. I thought it was a vibrant show, Kenny. I thought there was almost no flab. It just kept moving. There was no sort of dull points, no dead points. There was no sags to the show. It held one's attention all the way through. So, yeah, apart from the commentary, Kenny, I thought it was a really good, really strong showing from WWE.
Yeah, I'm the same. I thought it was a good episode. I thought it felt fresh. It makes me... I actually, when I finished the show, wanted to see next week's show, which in a week where there's so much wrestling going on is a testament to the strength of it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, big fan of the show.
I mean, a far cry from where we were sort of late springtime, when we were just like, oh my God, you know, that third hour of Raw was like, oh, you know, where we were just thinking, can this promotion and can this television program be saved? People were sort of saying it's over and Vince needs to retire, and just feels like a different program.
It does, and that's a real testament to what they've been doing. So let's talk about AEW Dynamite, the first episode from Washington, D.C. at the Capital One Arena, live on TNT. And I also, Finn, I think that maybe AEW and ITV were listening to you, because you said on the Overrun last week, you said, you know, even if they had the show on ITV on like a Thursday night, that would be better. But the way they'd scheduled it, you know, you weren't a fan of. So they announced a new schedule yesterday. They said, ITV has announced a new schedule, details for its free-to-air coverage of brand new weekly wrestling show AEW Dynamite. In a change to the original schedule, the full two-hour show will be available to view in the ITV Hub from 7 p.m. on Thursday, 3rd of October. It will then be shown at 11:20 p.m. on ITV4 on Friday evening, before being broadcast at 8:20 a.m. on Sunday, 6th of October, also on ITV4. And a one-hour highlights program will also be shown on the main ITV channel on Monday, 7th of October at 11:45 p.m. As previously announced, the shows will lead sequentially to the 9th of November Full Gear pay-per-view event. Who did you call ITV, Finn, and what did you have over them to get them to change this?
Well, you know, I cannot reveal my sources, Kenny. You know, I mean, this is top secret information, but all I can say, everyone, is you're welcome. You're welcome. I'm happy to be of service.
You know, we did disagree on the Overrun about some stuff, but I think what we can agree on is they've stepped up, they've improved the deal again, and I think that most people are getting at least I think what they want out of it. You know, if you don't want to pay for the fight live thing, you get it the next night on within 24 hours on the Hub. There's also a late night Friday night show, in which, you know, harkens back to, you know, late 90s, what we used to do. Yeah.
Yeah, so, Friday Night War.
So plenty of options, no matter where you are, I think.
Yeah, I mean, in all seriousness, I think the backlash was what prompted ITV to find a way to upgrade their coverage of All Elite Wrestling. And they've done the right thing. I mean, in this day and age, that's one of the real benefits of social media, is that people can express their outrage, or they can express their dissatisfaction with something. And you know, TV channels in this day and age, not always, but sometimes, and certainly in this case, they do listen to the audience. So they've rectified what was, you know, to me, a type of coverage that was just not going to do All Elite Wrestling justice, or the audience. It was not going to satisfy the audience. So, I mean, good on ITV for sorting this one out.
I mean, yeah, I will say, I know, I mean, I can't really say much, but I know that the AEW, before the announcement came out, were already working on trying to get a better deal. So they were already on it, but you know, the fan reaction obviously helped spur that ahead. Yes, for absolutely. Sure. But the guy who tweeted it out, I mean, because that guy's the guy that mucked everything up. Because the guy from ITV who tweeted out in his own personal account, he wasn't supposed to do that. And that spawned this whole thing, and it became a bit of a mess. But you know, props to everybody for stepping up to get an even better deal for everybody. And I think that the aim eventually, if numbers are good, will be to get it live on ITV4. And yeah. that I think will be the long-term goal. So
you know what, Kenny, does in the long term, all this doesn't really matter, because 3 weeks from now, no one will even remember that the coverage was going to be so poor, because the coverage from day one, they've sorted this out before the show even premiered. So good on everyone for you know, working together for this really good outcome for everyone, All Elite Wrestling, and particularly the audience.
So let's get into the show. Ollie and I actually streamed our reactions live on YouTube. You can go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes to watch us reacting to it as it happens. Interesting note here. I'm sure you saw this. Did you see the rating for the preview show they did on Tuesday night?
I'm not sure if I did.
So there was a countdown to Dynamite episode on TNT on Tuesday night, which pulled in 631,000 viewers for the previous show, which has got to be a good sign for them that's happening. According to some numbers on the PlayStation View, and we don't, that might not be a big amount of how people watch the show, but AEW was viewed 3 times the amount that NXT was. And AEW had a Google trend. They were trending with over 100,000 searches compared to NXT's 20,000.
Wow.
So there was a big interest in this show. We don't know how that's going to translate to the full rating. I'm very curious about that and seeing what it is. But before we talk about the details, what did you think of the show? What did you think of the overall way they presented it? They tried to do a lot of stuff on it. It was very kind of in-ring heavy as opposed to backstage angles.
Yes.
What do you make of it? What do you make of what they tried to put out there for the first attempt?
I thought Tony Schiavone, Jim Ross and Excalibur on commentary were leagues ahead of Vic Joseph, Dio and Jerry Lawler on Raw. So I thought they did well on commentary there. The production was first rate. I thought the graphics looked really good. The lighting was top notch. The crowd was lively for not everything, but most of the show. And the way it was, you know, I used to always read all the time, the crowd wasn't very well mic'd. I don't know whether that was something that people used as an excuse or not, but if crowd mic'ing is something that makes a difference between a good response and a bad response, well, here the mic'ing was absolutely spot on as well, because especially in that opening match, Cody Rhodes was beaming at the end of that opening match, and who can blame him? That response was like a superstar response to him and to the first match of this brand new enterprise. So I don't know whether I can really give an opinion on the entire show without coming across as churlish, because there was things about it that I didn't like. But at the same time, this is All Elite Wrestling. It's got to be different. They're not wanting to do what WWE's doing. And this was just one episode, Kenny. So I don't want to knock it and say, oh, this should have been this or this should have been that. I would rather sort of wait until about 4 episodes in, because then we'll know what the format is. I will say that it was well-paced. They didn't try and include too much on the show, which was something I was slightly concerned about, that they might go over the top and try and include too many segments and matches to try and give everyone a little bit of TV time on that first episode. So I thought the pacing was really good. Everything was given just the right amount of time. And I thought there was some good action there as well. So I would say it was a good start. That's how I would categorize it. But in terms of really going into the details of should they be doing this, should they be doing that, or no, they need to do more of this, let's give them 3 or 4 weeks before we really have that conversation. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that overall they did a good job on the first episode. They didn't have, to my knowledge, any production errors, which is good, because you know you want to make sure that when you're on TNT that you're putting over that product. I think one of the things that is going to become an issue, and you know, I've not watched NXT yet, but I think that this looked so big league that I think that, you know, if AEW starts beating NXT in the ratings, for example, which I think is probably going to happen this week. I just have this gut feeling that it's going to happen. That I think that they are going to have to move from Full Sail. It's just going to be an inevitability because, you know, I saw... Have you read anything that happened in NXT, or have you managed to avoid all of it?
Well, I know Finn Balor returned.
Okay, so yeah, that's the thing I was going to bring up. So when Finn Balor came out, I saw the clip of that. And people are very excited about it, and I do get the excitement, but there's part of me, as a wrestling fan, that kind of goes, well, what I'm really being told here is that Finn Balor went to the main roster. They didn't book him that well. He couldn't beat Brock Lesnar. And now he's back in NXT. And I don't really see that as a big success. I see that as an indictment of the failure of the booking on the main roster. And
also, he did the job to The Fiend as well. I mean, he was beaten.
Yeah, so to me, it's like, while it's good, I mean, look, Finn Balor in NXT will be great, I'm sure, and I'm sure he'll have brilliant matches, but like, I think that if you're up against another company who are, you know, on this show, and I think there's good ways and bad ways to look at some of the people that were featured in the show on Dynamite, but like, to me, Dynamite just looks like a 10 times bigger production than NXT does. And if they keep beating them in the ratings, I just don't see how you stay in Full Sail, because it's just going to look like it's not of the same league.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the look of it. I'm not saying the quality of the show or whether one was better than the other, because we've not watched NXT yet, so we can't really comment on which one's better because we've not watched them both.
That's right. I mean, this was a concern I expressed when I first learned of NXT's upgrade to the USA Network. That was like, well, they've got a winning formula here that works for them and doesn't require them to go on the road with all the, you know, additional expense, you know, and travel and logistics and all these other things that are involved. But you're right, Kenny, if AEW Dynamite from huge arenas like the Capital One Arena is outperforming NXT in the viewing figures each week, then that will be Vince's reaction. He'll be saying, this looks small time. We need to make it look big time. You know that, you just know that's going to happen, and that's going to bring a lot of problems that NXT doesn't really need. But, you know, we will see. Just to your point about Finn Balor, one thing I will just say, which I think is relevant at this moment, is that the big surprise at the end was the debut of Jake Hager.
Jake Hager, yeah.
Who, of course, was Jack Swagger, who was somebody who never really amounted to much in WWE. So, I mean, you could say the same thing about Jake Hager, Kenny, that here's a guy who was a bit of a flop in WWE, and I think he should shoulder some of the responsibility for that. But obviously, WWE never really got behind him either, never really made him the star that I think he could have been. He's brought out as their new killer heel. So I guess you could say the similarities there between Jake Hager and Finn Balor in NXT.
I think there is definitely a comparison. I think there's like, it's not a concern. I feel like this Hager, maybe one more, then to me you don't hire any more WWE mid-card guys.
Yeah,
like that's your lot with Hager. You know, they've been very particular in how they've presented him. Like, his Twitter handle right now is Real Jack Swagger, and through all of the official AEW promotion, they've not tagged him on Twitter for anything. And I actually thought that the way they were put across in commentary, you know, he's this undefeated MMA fighter. They are ignoring his WWE run, which I think is a smart move, because he has made a bit of a name for himself doing Bellator. So Hager's an interesting one. I think he could go either way. It could be one of those ones where, you know, he just doesn't get over. But when he came out, the crowd went nuts for it. And it's not a crowd of 400 people. It's a crowd of thousands of people. I think the crowd in Washington wanted this show to be a success.
Yes.
So they gave it that sort of seal of approval. But the key thing is here, this is, you know, Finn Balor is still in WWE. That's the difference, I think, is that he's still in WWE and he's went to NXT. I feel that's a little bit harder to justify, that he's still in the same company and to have him kind of, you know, lose to Brock, lose to The Fiend, lose to all these people, and then have him turn up in NXT as if, like, look, it's Finn Balor. To me, some of the shine's been taken off. Whereas for Hager, while I do have concerns that he's going to be, you're going to be able to take him seriously as a main event guy, he has went to MMA and had some wins and sort of reinvented himself a little bit. But time will tell. You know, like you said at the beginning, we can't really judge Hager. I mean, I think Hager's going to be like a couple of months before we can really judge. Has he upped his game? Has he upped his game in promos? Has he upped his game in the ring? Is he dynamic now? Is he going to be more interesting? These are all things that he's got a very rare second chance, and I hope he takes it.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of people who won't get that chance, and I hope he takes it. I'm with you. I thought Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur were really good in commentary. Maybe Jim Ross's best night in AEW so far. I thought he sold the gravitas of it really well. Hearing Jim Ross on TNT is not an irony that was lost on me. it was interesting. So we kick off the show, big video package, and then there was a video package for Cody Rhodes and Sammy Guevara. I liked the way the video package was shot. It was kind of them just talking about the match. And it led us to Cody versus Sammy Guevara. Cody's got Brandy in the corner. People who go to AEW shows love Cody Rhodes. But he just has this like superstar reaction every time he comes out. And he faces Sammy. They have this like 12-minute match. It's back and forth. There's a bit where Sammy ends up taking out Brandy. The crowd go batshit crazy when he takes out Brandy. But Brandy did get back up. She ends up taking a shot at Sammy. Back and forth. And in the end, you know, Sammy goes for shooting star press. Cody gets his knees up, rolls him over for the win. What did you make of the match and the choice to put this one on first?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good choice. I mean, fans, as you say, really wanted to like this show. They're aware that Cody Rhodes has been heavily involved in the creation of this organization and to bring it to this point. So it really felt like this was their reward. It was Cody's reward, being in the opening match. And then the fans were just sort of saying thank you to him as well. So we had a definite mutual appreciation society thing going on here. Sammy Guevara's real talent. I think he's a guy, he's going to be a big star in future. I mean, maybe they did too many kickouts, but I mean, is this AEW style? It needs to be, in a sense, different from WWE. So the trading cutters, you know, I think Guevara kicked out the disaster kick. You know, Rhodes ended up scoring the pin. So yeah, lots of near falls, lots of action. But I mean, the fans lapped it up. As I said earlier, Cody was beaming afterwards. You could see he's thinking, wow, that match went so well. And the fans loved it. And they love me. And I love them for loving me. You know, it's like that, it's like that Roxy Hart line from Chicago, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and the big thing is, once Cody had won, another thing I want to give them props for. So we're meant to believe that Brandy's a pro wrestler, right? That's what we're meant to believe. Am I correct?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. No, I mean, in her defense, I mean, when she was in the ring on the AEW show, was it Fight for the Fall?
Yeah, she had the match with Ali, yeah.
Yeah, she actually had a pretty good night. She did not embarrass herself at all. So yeah, absolutely
right. So she's meant to be a pro wrestler, right? That's what we're meant to believe. Sure. And something that they did here, which I thought it's a very subtle thing, but I noticed it, was Lana is supposed to be a pro wrestler as well. We, you know, Lana's wrestled for a couple of years. We could argue how successful that's been.
You're not convinced, are you, that she's a pro wrestler, can you?
I need to see some credentials.
I need more evidence.
Where's your wrestling license? But what happened when Sammy collided with Brandy, Brandy sold it very well, but she got up. Yeah. Because she's a pro wrestler. And being hit by somebody does not necessitate her being dead for the rest of the day. Whereas, like, there was that thing in WWE not that long ago where Lana, I think she got kicked or something by Nakamura. Or something happened, but, like, they sold it as if she had died. But she's a wrestler. So, you know, she should be able to get up eventually from something like that. And so here they did something that they took something that is a trope elsewhere that's annoying and they flipped it. And I thought it was quite clever to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Lana one time, did she fall off the apron and she hurt her ankle? And it was Royal Rumble, wasn't it? And then she came out for the Rumble match and she still couldn't walk. And you're like, no one sells anything in WWE except for Lana. But absolutely, yeah, excellent point. But at least that gave us Becky Lynch and her winning Rumble and going on to WrestleMania, give us a man. So,
Could have been very different if Lana won the women's title at WrestleMania.
Yeah, Lana was a very giving performance that night, Kenny. So let's give her credit for that.
Fuck off. but then post-match, there's another kind of bit of poignancy that's kind of interesting, because I was there live when Cody and Dustin had their match at Double or Nothing, and we talked about the podcast, the reaction to that match, and you almost felt Dusty was watching them from above, and the fans are chanting for him and all this kind of stuff. And after the match, Tony Schiavone's going to go in to have a word with Cody, and Cody just hugs Tony Schiavone, and it just felt like there was a weird thing about, like, Cody is now on TNT in the ring, and he's kind of beloved, and Dusty's not here, but Dusty used to be in WCW, and even though he was more known for being in Crockett or whatever, there was a weird thing about Schiavone and Cody on TNT that, like, you could tell it just kind of got to Cody, and I think everybody kind of got what that moment was, and I thought that was quite cool. And then they did another subtle thing, because they had Sammy shove Cody, but then do a handshake. Jericho attacks Cody from behind, and then Sammy just kind of retreats, which is kind of a heelish thing to do, but it would play into something later on in the show. And Jericho ends up, doing a code breaker and just basically beating up Cody. So they set you up straight away that here's your main title feud. That's what it is. Jericho's got some heat on Cody. So I think they're a good start to kind of get people kind of hyped for what they've got going on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the Tony Schiavone thing, it just felt really spontaneous, didn't it? Like, it was a little sort of natural moment there where Cody was so overcome with emotion that he just had to give Tony a hug. And I'm sure that meant so much to Schiavone, who had obviously worked for Crockett, then he'd worked for WCW as well. And, Tony, I should mention, actually, Tony Schiavone was always a huge, huge fan of the ringside or the in-ring interview. This was something that he always championed in WCW. So it was very notable to me, or noteworthy to me, that Tony was the one who went to the ring with the mic to do these interviews. So that's something that he was always a huge fan of. I just thought I'd throw that in there. As you said afterwards, Guevara held out his hand to Cody, good match, show of respect. We didn't really know if it was a babyface turn or not. And as we found out later in the show, it wasn't. But that was, again, a thing that got us thinking, like, where's this going? Then Jericho runs in. The only slight drawback to them being in a huge arena, Kenny, was that the crowd is making all this noise. We know someone's doing a run-in. And it's taking forever for the guy to get there. And Jericho, lays Cody out. So that's the only drawback to it being in a large venue. Jericho beat the hell out of Cody throughout the break. Powerbombed Rhodes on two chairs. It did sort of feel a little bit like a pale imitation of the Raw angle with Brock Lesnar and Ray and Dominic. But, they needed to do something like this, because, as you say, Cody versus Jericho is where they're going, and we needed to get some heat on that. My only question, I guess, would be, was where was MJF? Why didn't he come out to save Cody?
Well, they have put a video. I don't know what the reason is, but there is a video on the All Elite Wrestling Twitter page where he's answered that question. I don't know what he says, though, but that he has answered that. So
okay, all right. Well, I apologise for... No, I haven't actually seen that. So, but I thought that was a pertinent question to bring up.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that he has answered it. So good for them for that.
We also got MJF taking out Brandon Cutler in like a 2.5 minute match. It almost looked like Cutler got injured. So they went quick to the finish with MJF doing the armbar. MJF did a pre-match promo where he berated the crowd, talked about how Dungeons and Dragons aren't real. MGF just really clicks for me as a heel, so I'm a big fan of his. And whether the Cutler injury was real or not, I will give this to Brandon Cutler. On the Road to TNT series on YouTube, I watched one of the latest episodes, and they had a sort of 5-minute thing on Brandon Cutler. And I went into it not really caring about Brandon Cutler, and I came out of it kind of digging his story. You know, he used to wrestle, he stopped thinking he was never going to make it. Then he was working with the Young Bucks and all that kind of stuff, and then they offered him, he was doing producing behind the scenes, and they offered him a contract because they wanted to give him a chance, and he breaks down, and they interview his wife, and they want to get out of this small house they're in, they want to get to a better neighbourhood, they've got kids. Like, they kind of tell his story, and it's a realistic story, so I kind of bought into him a little bit more because of that. I kind of wish they'd played part of that on the show so that people could have seen that, because probably not a lot of people are seeking that out, but...
I think they should. Because, I mean, they mentioned on commentary, didn't they, the main points of what you've just explained there, that were in the video, that he'd done that and then he'd come back to wrestling. But you're right, if they'd just shown a little bit of that, I think that would have done a lot more for Brandon Cutler than this match did. As you said, something went wrong there. I think they ended up cutting it short. I mean, it was a nothing match. Finish didn't look good at all. It just came from out of nowhere, but... if the guy had suffered a genuine injury, then absolutely did the right thing going home early.
Then we had a bit where Chris Van Vliet interviewed basically Jay and Silent Bob, Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes. So that led to Angelico and Jack Evans coming down, and Private Party are there, basically building up the tag team thing. This segment to me kind of fell flat, didn't really work.
Yeah. Yes.
Didn't really feel the... like, because I mean, I've never seen the Jay and Silent Bob movies. I know that they're super popular, but it kind of felt like they had Jay and Silent Bob there, who are funny guys, and they wanted to promote the tag thing, but they didn't really have an idea of what it was going to be, where it was going, and I don't really think Van Vliet kind of knew either. So it just kind of was a bit of a dud segment for me.
Yeah, it did. They didn't really explain who the teams were that gatecrashed the segment. I mean, Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes, they should have really had more time. It should have just been about them, really. I mean, they mentioned that Chris Jericho is in the film. So just that there would have been enough, really. I mean, I've seen Clarks, I've seen Mallrats, and I've seen Chasing Amy. I don't think I've seen any of the others. But I mean, Clarks was, you know, I think that was Kevin Smith's big break. So I was a big fan of that movie back in the 90s. So it was a good plug for their film, so I'm sure they were happy with it. But you're right, there was too much going on here that it just really, instead of it being like a focus segment, it was kind of muddled. So hopefully they'll look at that and try and learn from that one and not do that one again.
Yeah, I did enjoy the follow-up segment though, where SCU pretended to be like Obama and the Secret Service. And then they ended up out on the ramp, and they basically revealed that, you know, Scorpio Sky was going to recuse himself. It's going to be Daniels and Kazarian in the tag tournament. This brought out the Lucha Brothers, and they were talking about the best team in the universe. This, to me, was far more effective in building the tag tournament, because these are two teams that I enjoy, I buy into, I want to see, and there was a reason for them coming out. SCU are very funny with the comedy, so the Obama Secret Service thing really worked for me. This worked far better, and the fact that it came right after the other one kind of highlighted how much of a dud the one right before it was.
Yeah, I mean, I still felt like this was rushed. I think I wish there'd just been one segment instead of two segments, and I would have liked to have seen and heard more from SCU and from the
Lucha Brothers
as well, who am I a big fan of those two. So it kind of felt a bit rushed there. I noticed the pull apart was pretty good. And again, you know, it's all about the matches. It's, you know, like I was saying earlier, they didn't need to do any more than they did. You know, if they tried to do too much, then you fail to achieve your objectives. So we'll see where this goes next. Yeah.
Then we had a match with Hangman Page and Pac, which was is initially supposed to be a part of Double or Nothing, but ended up happening in England. Pac couldn't be on the show. So we got Pac and Hangman Page. They had a 30-minute match. It's pretty fun, solid match. Pac gets another big win. You've got to imagine they've got plans for him in AEW going forward.
Yes, he won with the Brutalizer, which is a submission hold. Big loss, another big loss for Adam Page. obviously didn't go back and work on the parents' tobacco farm. He's still going. You've got to wonder where Adam Page goes after this, because it did seem like he was somebody who could. I don't think anyone really thought he was going to defeat Chris Jericho, but they were trying to persuade us that he might. And he's just coming off two really big losses here. So kind of a setback for him. I'm not quite sure where he goes next. To me, Page and Pac, they're not particularly charismatic. You know, they're not bursting with personality. And that's always going to hold them back in terms of becoming true top guys. But, you know, we know Pac's obviously really good in the ring. He's a veteran. Adam Page, he's somebody who, you know, I'm not sold on him. I'm not sure if he can be the guy that people tell me he either is or is going to be. So he's still got a lot to prove to me. But yeah, big win for Pac. Looks to me like, will he be somebody? Where's he going next? You know, is he going to face Cody maybe? I don't know. I mean, Cody's obviously going to face Jericho next.
Is he groomed for being the first contender for Cody if Cody wins the belt?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, possibly. They can't really do Pac versus Kenny Omega again because they've just done that. So who are the other potential opponents for Pac? Really. And this is where you look at the roster and it kind of becomes a bit thin. And this is the problem for AEW long term, is that I feel like their roster is kind of thin in terms of stars. So that's why, you know, where we're going to be 4, 6 weeks, 8 weeks down the line. But I mean, you know, they're trying with Pac here. They're trying to make him into a star. This was something that WWE never really did. He definitely reached a career ceiling there. You can understand why he left. He obviously had other reasons for going. It wasn't just because he felt like he'd hit a career ceiling. I don't think deep down he just didn't want to be there anymore. But you do wonder what he's going to do next. Yeah, Pac versus Cody for down the line, maybe. So we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. Up next, though, we had Riho versus Nyla Rose for the AEW Women's Championship. Riho ended up getting the win. The second half of this match, it really kind of came alive. People were very behind Riho, and you know, and Nyla played the role of the heel, I thought, pretty well. What did you make of the match and the decision to not put the belt on Nyla and put it on Riho?
The crowd were with them, definitely in the second half. What I really liked about this match, Kenny, was Rio's reaction to winning. I mean, she was like overcome with emotion. It was as if she'd won, you know, a medal at the Olympics. A wrestler cannot always do this, but I thought her reaction here was absolutely perfect, because this was a historic occasion. This was to name the first AEW Women's Champion on the first episode of AEW Dynamite. This was a huge milestone for her and for AEW and for wrestling in general. So I thought the way she responded to this really added to the significance of the occasion. So that was my lasting impression of it.
Do you know what I didn't realise before AEW came around, and as someone who primarily watches WWE, I never realised how much I've kind of become conditioned to attractive blonde women or brunette women who all kind of look the same. And I think one of the things that's kind of cool about this that I enjoyed was that Riho is kind of, I've not really seen a lot of performers like her before. And then Nyla Rose being this kind of, you know, trans beast woman, it's different, it's new to me, and seeing them have this kind of David and Goliath thing going on is not really what we get to see with women a lot. I mean, Awesome Kong and Gail Kim back in the day, I guess, would be one of your comparisons that you could have, but like, it felt like a different kind of match. It felt like a different roles for a women's match that we don't get to see too often, and I think that for me added to my enjoyment of it. And Nyla is quite green, I will say that, but I think that Nyla can get away with it because she's kind of supposed to play this beast who's not necessarily supposed to be, you know,
smooth on really.
She can get away with not being smooth because she's supposed to be this beast character. So
yes,
I think that kind of plays to her strengths, and you know, I think the crowd helped this match tremendously. But this was just a match of the night for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was really good. I mean, there was a moment there where Riho collapsed under Nyla's weight, and it kind of looked like a blown spot, but it didn't matter because it played into the story of the match because of the huge size difference between them. And in many ways, it rallied fans behind Rio even more. So it was like one of those rare occasions where something going wrong makes the match better. Kind of a bit like in the angle with Dominic and Brock Lesnar that we were talking about earlier. So, I mean, to me, you know, the great tragedy here for me, and this has got nothing to do with AEW and everything to do with WWE, is that Kairi Sane, to me, could be as over as Rio in WWE if WWE had given her a chance. And she could be that character, that, you know, courageous babyface. I mean, she was like this when she was wrestling Shayna in that long series. You know, Shayna was much bigger than her, much stronger than her. You know, had the real MMA background, but Kairi had that never say die attitude and that huge babyface spirit. So, you know, I've said this before, I just feel like Kairi Sane could be a huge star. They've just blown it with her. And AEW has proven here with Rio that this can be done in the United States, you know, in this match, you know, with no, I mean, we've seen her before in our AEW events, but this is obviously her first TV appearance, so she doesn't have a huge amount of promotion behind her. And she came out here and gave us this match with Nyla Rose and that reaction afterwards, which really just put it over the top to me and made it so memorable. I think this was a match that people will be talking about for a long time to come.
And you know, Nyla got some of her heat back by attacking Michael Nakazawa, who came out after the match and hit a Liger bomb. And, you know, she didn't quite get it the first time, so she got it the second time. Again, I think her kind of being a beast kind of makes that okay. You know, it's like when Brock almost didn't get Dominic up in one of the times on Monday, but he just did it again. And, like, you know, it didn't matter. You know, he was going to get him and she was going to get him, and that was it. And then she, you know, she sets up Rio for a Death Valley driver on the apron, but Kenny Omega runs down, breaks up to make the save. They've told the story. I can't remember if it was on the road to one of the things or if it was on TV that Omega's the guy that brought her in because he, you know, wrestled with her in Japan. She's talked about, you know, doing intergender wrestling with him and how, you know, he's helped her face some bigger opponents to prepare for Nyla Rose. So him coming out made sense. And I thought it was a good post-match angle.
And that was a nice lead into the main event, wasn't it, Kenny?
It was. So the main event is the Elite, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against Santana, Ortiz and Chris Jericho. Moxley would end up coming out and taking out Omega and they would brawl through the crowd. And then Moxley did a vicious DDT through a glass table at the back. And that would kind of take Omega out of the match. Which then left the Bucks to sort of handle the rest of it. Jericho ended up intercepting a Meltzer driver attempt with a code breaker and hit a Judas effect on Matt Jackson to get the win. So Jericho, Santana and Ortiz got the win. Before we talk about the post-match angle, what did you make of the main event match and the kind of the Moxley Omega thing that they told during it?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Moxley and Omega was the highlight of the match with Moxley doing the run-in. And this was kind of a contrast to the Rhodes and Jericho thing earlier, where Moxley does the run-in and Omega has got his back to Moxley, but he's listening to the crowd, realizes that someone's behind him and turns round. And that was kind of the opposite of what normally happens in pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really nice touch. So they had this big brawl through the crowd and they followed that. The cameras were removed from the match and instead we followed Moxley and Omega. There was a nice little gag there where Omega attacks Moxley with a mop and then they made the reference to Kenny being the cleaner. You know, I thought that was, there was some wit there, a little bit of wit attached to that. So, and as you say, they fight to what was, I think they described as a VIP area, even though there was no VIPs there. And then Moxley does like a double arm DDT on Omega through an obviously gimmicked glass coffee table. Now, what occurred to me after this was, are these two, the question on my mind was, are they coming back to the match? Will they no sell this like people do so often in pro wrestling? And will Omega rejoin the match? And he never did. So I was really pleased to see that. So
there's little subtle things they're doing that are kind of telling you, we're not doing that stuff. which, you know, the fair play, yes. Lay the gauntlet down. But of course, the post-match angle was also very memorable because Cody runs down, he's going to have to Jericho, Sammy Guevara runs in and low blows Cody, then Dustin Rhodes runs in for the save, and then he kind of takes everybody out, and then Jake Hager runs in, he takes out Dustin, and then we have the team of Santana, Ortiz, Hager, Jericho and Guevara basically beating the shit out of them all. The people chants. Jericho's, we're kind of led to believe by the commentary that Jericho's brought Hager in as like an enforcer. Jericho gets them all to hold up Cody so he can hit the Judas effect on them. So we're kind of left with, you know, all the baby faces laid down and Jericho and all the heels kind of standing tall. How was this as a finishing angle for the show? And did it leave you going off there thinking they've set up some good things for next week or not?
I mean, lots of people have made New World Order comparisons, and I do see that. I absolutely can see the connection there. I mean, I thought it was quite a hot finish to the show. It's certainly one of those sort of endings where you want to tune in next week to see where it goes, which, you know, you were saying that about Raw earlier, Kenny. Oh, I can't wait for next week. And that was definitely the intention here, was let's give them a cliffhanger. Let's give them a big beatdown ending. So how will the babyfaces respond to this next week? Can I just make a couple of comments about the match, Kenny?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, Jericho wasn't in it that much, and I was pleased about that. I didn't think he looked that good in what he did. I would have liked the announcers to tell us more about Santana and Ortiz. I thought these two guys were failed really quite badly by the promotion and the commentators during the show. Didn't really seem like either the announcers didn't know what these guys had done or were told not to talk about what they'd done previously. That was very generic, the announcing when it came to those two guys. Also didn't really like how earlier in the show that Santana and Ortiz were in the locker room and Jericho's barking out instructions to him like they weren't in his league. Well, I know Jericho's a bigger star, but these two guys are a hell of a team. And I thought the way that was portrayed made them seem like they were vastly inferior to Jericho. People might say, well, Finlay, they are. Well, you know, these are two guys that are new and they need to be built up, not knocked down. So I didn't really like that. I'm not a fan of the Young Bucks. I thought a lot of the stuff they did in the match just looked really, just looked so manufactured and contrived and just not natural. I just think their style is not realistic at all. Jericho ended up scoring the pin. And then we, as you said, we had the big angle afterwards. Jake Hager was the one who was presented as the star. So we were talking earlier about whether or not he's going to be viewed as somebody who is worthy of this sport, or will he be seen as a WWE reject? It's up to AEW, actually, to manipulate its own audience into thinking that this guy is a star. And he's not somebody that, you know, we've picked up because WWE doesn't want him. This guy's a star and he's here because he wants to be. And wow, WWE blew it because look what he can do. So I'm excited to see where that goes. The more I think about that, the more interested I am in seeing if Jake Hager can be this guy that he wasn't in WWE. And I hope he can, because I always thought he was a really good talent. But I think overall, Kenny, I mean, I think they achieved most of what they set out to do. I like the fact that Kenny Omega didn't rejoin the match. So that was really good. And I liked, you know, the fact that they left us with a lot of questions that we as viewers will want to see answered next week. So I thought Raw, WWE with Raw and AEW Dynamite achieved that pretty well this week. And I think, you know, there's a lot of achievements I think we can say that WWE and AEW have made this week. And we were saying at the beginning of the podcast, this has been a huge week for wrestling, the biggest in, you know, nearly two decades. And I'm not saying it's been the best week for wrestling in a very long time, but I think it's been a very good week for pro wrestling. And I think we should all be excited to see what next week is going to bring.
Yeah, 100%, I would agree. I think AEW did a good job. I think they are going to beat NXT in the ratings. That's my prediction. The ratings haven't come out yet. Who do you think is going to get a bigger rating this week?
I think AEW will. I think they will do for because it's new, and I think lots of people will want to check this new product out.
But in 4 weeks, that'll be the real test. What are the ratings in 4 weeks?
Exactly. That's when we're going to know, you know, if AEW's got the staying power and if it's managed to hook this audience, and that the wrestling fans are saying, well, now I'm going to watch AEW live and maybe I'll watch NXT on the network, or I'll tape it and watch it later or whatever. But yeah, it's who is going to get that first run audience. That's the coveted thing, isn't it? And, you know, there's a lot of variables here. And we can sit here and say, oh, if this happens and this could happen, you know, let's give them a chance. Let's give it a few weeks. And it's always interesting watching the journey. Let's not try and get ahead of ourselves. Let's, you know, review it on a week by week basis. And maybe after 4 weeks, let's do some deeper analysis then. Does that sound like a good idea to you?
Sounds like a plan to me. But in the meantime, we're going to go off into the podcast and Sunset. We'll be back at the weekend with the overrun where we'll know the ratings. We can analyse a little bit there. Where can people find you online, though, Finn, if they want to say hi?
Yeah, they can find me at Finlay Martin on Twitter and Facebook. And my website's finlaymartin.co.uk. And where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me, as always, on Twitter at @inside_the_ropes or KennyMC1985. You can go to patreon.com/insidetheropes to get bonus content, podcasts, articles, overruns, retro pay-per-view reviews, all that good stuff. Also go to youtube.com/insidetheropes for bonus interviews with Sammy Guevara, Cody Rhodes, MJF, Tony Schiavone, Paul Heyman, Eric Bischoff, loads and loads of people, live streams. And also insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets for limited general admission tickets for Bret Hart next week and VIP and general admission for Kenny Omega in April. So we want to thank you for all your support, though. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.